Hello and welcome to Spotlight on Asia on Radio France International. I'm Roslyn Hyams. Sri Lanka's president, Maithripala Sirisena, has been in power for a little over 2 years. 2017 had started off with pretty good news for the country, whose three-decade-long civil war between the government and ethnic Tamil separatists ended in 2008 and was followed by a power surge for victorious President Mahinda Rajapakse, who was later deposed. Pakyasoti Saravanamuttu is with the Centre for Policy Alternatives in Colombo. He says the government has made some positive accomplishments. He says, however, it's work in progress and some essentials have yet to be implemented.
The winning platform was one of governance and anti-corruption. They promised to bring in a new constitution. They also talked about transitional justice and major economic development. Now, all of these processes have been initiated, but things seem to have got, or give the impression, of being stuck or having been slowed down at the beginning of 2017. There was to be an important debate on the constitution in the first 10 days of January. That was postponed. It appears to have been postponed indefinitely. On transitional justice, a task force has just given in its report, having gone around the country and collected opinion on the mechanisms the government has promised. The government, in terms of either the president or the prime minister, haven't really commented on it. And so, at the moment, it looks like the sort of honeymoon may well be over. Some decisive steps need to be taken to re-inject the whole process of reform on all these fronts with renewed vigor and commitment.
Sanjana Hattatua, political commentator and editor of Ground Views from Sri Lanka.
There is now more open discussion around governance. When the government fails to live up to its promises, there is pushback from media and civil society. You see in cabinet press briefings, for example, the media grilling the ministers on issues and policies both done and promised in a manner that simply didn't exist and couldn't even be contemplated in the years under the former president and his government. All this is a sea change from what existed before. What I think has not happened, and where President Sirisena has not lived up to his promise, is in terms of the systemic reform that was promised. Electoral reform has stalled. Constitutional reform has stalled. We have an office called the Office for Missing Persons, which is a historic bill passed in Parliament last year looking into disappearances. So that was a very positive thing. But the office itself has yet to be established. Likewise with the right to information legislation, absolutely historic after 20-odd years of fighting for it. And we are promised this on the 4th of February this year, and we can only hope that the government will have the ability to take forward the promise around RPI as well.
President Sirisena and his Prime Minister Ranil Wickremesinghe are from very different parties, both in terms of political spectrum and their respective positions in the latter years of the civil war. Political reconciliation there has been to a degree, but Pakyasoti Saravanamuttu explains that the differences inevitably slow progress. As a national reconciliation mechanism, the transitional justice programme is key to transforming Sri Lanka and giving all its citizens a chance to move on from their war experiences. Meanwhile, Sanjana Hattatua says the government must show its commitment to making this happen.
Both the president and the PM completely silent over what has been an absolutely historic process of going to citizens, 7,306 of them to be precise, representing much more across the island, looking at transitional justice mechanisms and how they can be fed into reconciliation moving ahead in the years that this government has. That was a process that took place between June and September last year. And many have said that in any country in the world post-war, this has been one of the most, one of the widest and deepest citizen engagements around transitional justice mechanisms before they were set up. So it's a historic report that was released on the 5th of January 2006, on a day and at a time that the president said he would be available. He didn't come. The prime minister didn't come. They both are silent around this report. So the president's silence on a number of issues critical to how Sri Lanka will deal with its past and how it will engage around constitutional reform and how it will change the systemic nature of politics leaves many, many questions unanswered. And that's the uncertainty, I think, that colors governance 2 years into his election into office.
You're listening to Spotlight on Asia on RFI with me, Roslyn Hyams. Sri Lanka is also short of money. The war and the final massive army offensive emptied the country's coffers. The authorities are trying various avenues to raise money. One of them hinges on China. Colombo owes Beijing $8 billion. The government intends to turn a loss-making harbour, Hambantota, into a money-making joint venture with a Chinese firm. To do this, they're setting up a special industrial zone, which opened a week ago by the Prime Minister and China's ambassador to Colombo, Yi Xianliang. China reckons that the project could bring in as much as $5 billion in the next 2 to 5 years and create 100,000 jobs. It's a controversial project which has led to a strike among temporary dock workers who fear they'll lose their jobs and protests from landowners in the area who fear they will lose their land. As far as the landowners are concerned, the authorities say 95% of the land to be occupied by the industrial zone is government-owned. The rest, they say, will be bought. Land grabbing is not on their list of things to do. Sri Lanka is exerting some economic force of attraction in its post-war period. Some healthy signs are definitely appearing. Tourism has made a comeback in Sri Lanka and reached $3.5 billion last year, according to the tourism minister, and more than 2 million tourists visited the island. The authorities claim that the tourist rush, as it were, has been helped along by improvements in the country's human rights reputation. But tourists may be jumping the gun if it's human rights rather than pleasant beaches and tea plantations and natural hospitality that encourages them to visit the island. Earlier this week, the European Commission, recognising progress made, proposed restoring tariff concessions for imports from Sri Lanka. They've been scrapped for 7 years now and had hit the island's textile sector especially hard. The EU's move followed the new government's pledge to improve human rights and to continue to strive for what is referred to as good governance. The European Parliament and Council have up to 4 months to raise potential objections before the measures become effective. If formally approved, the EU will carry out closer scrutiny of the rights record. EU Trade Commissioner Cecilia Malmström said the improvements should include making Sri Lankan counter-terrorism legislation fully compatible with human rights conventions, for example. Sanjana Hatatua gives precise incidents to show where the Sri Lankan authorities can make exactly that kind of improvement.
There are reports of ongoing torture, custodial torture, police brutality. And these were reports that came out last year, and they're very, very serious reports, including not from any NGO, not from any human rights organization from outside the country like Amnesty International or Human Rights Watch. It came from the Human Rights Commission of Sri Lanka itself. And this report was tabled in Geneva late last year. And, I mean, let me end by giving you a measure of how seriously the government takes this. It boggles the mind. One of the gentlemen on the official delegation of the government of Sri Lanka that went to the UNCAT, the UN Committee Against Torture hearings in Geneva, was a man in the past who headed the terrorist investigation division and has been openly associated with allegations of torture. And this was a man now in the government delegation looking into a report that says the torture is ongoing. So it was an absolutely confusing moment for a government that was elected to look into these issues to then have a representative in its delegation who has internationally been identified as a person who perpetrated them as well. So these are some of the broader questions around the timber of governance, and in fact, it raises the question as to how serious government really is around the promises it made in 2015, around, in particular, reconciliation and constitutional reform. The two will shape the destiny of our country, not just this year, but in the years to come. And I really hope that the government has the political will to take forward the promise that it promised the people in 2015, including its president.
That's all we have time for this week. Thanks to my guests, Paikesati Saravanamutu and Sanjana Hatatua, and thank you for listening. From me, Roslyn Hyams, until next time, goodbye.